Now, our next guest has been called the most powerful Irish woman in the world since moving to the US at a young age from Dublin. Samantha Power has scaled the heights of journalism, academia and politics. She won a Pulitzer for her book on genocide back in about 10 years ago. She was an advisor to Barack Obama, and in 2013 she was appointed as US ambassador to the UN. Now, this weekend she is back in Ireland. She will be interviewed in the Sea Lodge Hotel in Waterville in Kerry as part of the Charlie Chaplin Festival. Good morning, Samantha, and thanks indeed for joining us. Let's start with the Charlie Chaplin Festival on Saturday. What can people expect?
Well, good cheer, lots of traditional music, comedy, and politics. Cass Sunstein, professor at Harvard Law School, who happens to be my husband, is giving a talk on impeachment, which is a topic of some interest to people, certainly in the United States, but perhaps also here in Ireland. And I'm doing an interview and reflecting on Obama and the future of the world. But there's a lot going on. It has Charlie Chaplin all over the title and all over the posters, but it's a much broader festival than that. And I think it's a great weekend, actually. And the circus is here for one's kids.
Okay, great. And you do have a special connection with that area. Am I right in saying, did you get married down there?
I did. You can see the church we got married in up on a cliff in the distance from where the festival is held. So it's a beautiful place. My aunt and uncle live here. They were the town doctors until recently. And so we come back every summer.
Do you still keep an eye on events in Ireland? I mean, I know you've been in America for a long, long time. Do you still watch events here? Do you still kind of watch the political events here?
Well, I do, especially as Ireland takes the lead on so many issues and becomes kind of beacon on LGBT rights and other things, and my country goes in a different direction. It's quite heartening, actually, to see some of what's going on here, but it's a very different country than the one I left when I was 9 years old. It's just the diversity, and again, the politics are quite different. I'm worried, like everybody, with Brexit, about how things unfold in the north. But yeah, I do my best to keep up, and I, especially when I come back, I try to dig in as much as I can to what's going on here.
I'm fascinated by the topic of your husband's speech. I was sort of wondering how long would it take me to get down there in the car on Saturday to listen
nice.
To it. And it's a very live issue at the moment. Look, you worked with President Obama, are you as horrified as lots of people who worked in not just the Obama administration, but the Bush administrations and Reagan administrations? Are you as horrified with how things are developing in your home country at the moment?
I think, you know, depending on what tweet or what speech or what crazy policy has been articulated the day before, the morning of, horrified could be one adjective. Heartbroken is often the more salient emotion, I think, for me and many other people. I mean, I think it's, you know, I have two young children who I had while I was working at the White House with President Obama. And so as with any parent, my impulse most of the time is to want time to slow down. You know, when you have young kids, you want to kind of freeze the time. But Trump is creating a great schizophrenia in my household because I want the clock to speed up and to get to the point where we can try to recover from some of what is being done. Now, the good news is, as you've seen, I know that our institutions have kicked in. They are strong, you know, whether it's the press, who, of course, he has attacked with great viciousness just in the last day, or the Congress and even his own party kicking in and not allowing the repeal of health care to go forward. That was a big disappointment for President Trump. I mean, the plan that he put forward would have hurt so many Americans. Or whether it's the private sector on climate and Paris, Trump is, with great fanfare, trying to pull us out of the Paris Agreement. But behind the scenes, our private sector is continuing to invest in renewables. A lot of the rules that the Obama administration put in place to try to cut down emissions are sticking. The courts are throwing out a lot of the very restrictive voter ID laws that Trump is, not himself personally responsible for, but of course is delighted with, because they would limit the voting of minorities in the next election, which he already has his eye on. So, you know, things are happening that are preventing the worst excesses of this presidency. But we all worry, of course, you know, what does a person like this do in a crisis? I mean, right now, most of the crises you read about and that we live with in the States are man-made. They're made by him. What happens when a real crisis descends? And, you know, I know firsthand from being in the Situation Room with President Obama that those crises happen a lot. And there's only one man, as it happens, one man who sits at the end of the table and makes the ultimate judgments about what to do. And in a sense, we've been fortunate so far that with all this, you know, drama that Trump generates himself, we haven't had something enormous happen in the real world that puts him in a position of having to be decisive and calm and professional and deliberate, because none of those are his hallmarks.
Does it keep you awake at night? Do you worry about what would happen in such a scenario?
I do, and, you know, I do what I think a lot of my countrymen and women do, which is we console ourselves by concentrating on the people around him, which again are part of the kind of institution that is the checks and balances that exist. You know, having General Kelly, who's experienced war, whose own son was killed in battle not long ago as the chief of staff. Having General Mattis, who said, you know, if you cut the budget of the State Department, you better buy me more bullets, because if you gut diplomacy, we're going to have more war. You know, we hope that in that Situation Room, as recommendations are being made to the president, that, you know, there'll be a critical mass of sensible voices. That's where consolation comes, but it doesn't come from imagining that Trump will change. And I think that's been the biggest disappointment is, you know, all of us were very disappointed who hoped that Secretary Clinton would be elected, and we were very surprised. I mean, to be honest, none of us saw this coming, which we need to take responsibility for and better understand how so many people got it so wrong, as there was a pain out there that was drawn to elements that we never thought that they could be drawn to. I mean, we knew Trump would get substantial support, but to get enough support to win, again, came as a big shock. But I think the hope, even the morning after the election, when my staff at the U.S. mission to the UN was devastated, I mean, I've LGBT people on my staff, people with disabilities, Hispanics, African American, I mean, people who'd just been disparaged, women, of course, who and what had turned up in the election about Trump and women. And I mean, they were just crushed by what had happened. But we were able to sort of say, look, the institution, the office will change the man. Like, you can't be in that office and walk in those halls and carry the weight of those decisions of sending men and women to war. And again, walk in the halls of Washington and Lincoln and even Reagan and Obama and not change and not grow up. But that just hasn't happened. And we're deep enough in where I think it's really hard to see that happening. So our consolation comes in looking at the individuals around him, looking at the Congress. Republicans in Congress have begun to speak out much more forcefully in recent days. They are all looking at their political futures, and so there will come a tipping point where they will have to make a judgment about, is it in my interest to distance myself and to vote in opposition to the things this man wants for my own fortune, or is it in my interest to hang close? And there's still a lot of individuals who behind the scenes are kind of mumbling, oh my gosh, this guy, but are sticking with him when it comes to the big votes, and that needs to change.
Okay. Listen, we're just out of time, and I can't let you go without asking you about the global picture. Unfortunately, it's a huge ranging question, and we don't have time to deal with it in any great substance. But you know, Syria, the threat from ISIS. Putin's Russia. I mean, there are a lot of reasons. The world seems like a very uncertain place at the moment.
is, and it was uncertain when we were in too. You know, having a deliberative process, president with good judgment, doesn't make the craziness of the world go away, I'm afraid to say. You know, ISIS grew up over the life of the 8 years we were in office. The North Korea threat and proliferation extended itself. But I mean, the good news about the moment right now is, notwithstanding world leaders, I think, horror in some cases and disappointment in others with Trump and his style of leadership, a lot of the alliances so far are sticking. So the coalition against ISIS is sticking. It is making progress. In my view, they're using excessive force and overweighting the military dimension of that, because, of course, ISIS is a cancer of the mind as much as it is a territorial problem. But nonetheless, they've taken back territory, and the process of rebuilding has started. Luckily, we're not still in an escalatory cycle with North Korea, though that can happen again in a heartbeat. But again, you know, diplomats are continuing to maintain the relationships with Japan, to try to work with China to get them to exert their influence. Okay. So far, again, the kind of organic strength of American leadership that Trump inherited, again, which was not invincible by any means and hadn't made these problems go away. But so far, that's still carrying us a little bit. And that's really important, that Europe, even as Brexit goes forward and as Europe has its own problems, that Europe steps up in this moment and leads and invests, you know, in fighting terrorism, in countering extremism, in development assistance, in combating famine. There are four famines around the world now, as Trump is sounding off on this problem and that problem. I mean, people are dying needlessly. And so, if anything, maybe this period, one bright spot can be that even small countries like Ireland, and certainly large countries like Germany and Chancellor Merkel, step up and begin to carry more of the global leadership burden. But it's a sad thing to say that, because we should be doing that in partnership.
Okay, thanks indeed for talking to us this morning, and best of luck with that Charlie Chaplin Festival taking place in Waterville at the Sea Lodge Hotel this weekend. Samantha Power, thank you so much for talking to us this morning.
Coming up next, Liverpool are among those looking forward to the Champions League group stage draw, and the dangers of having the name Robert Lee in the US today. Stay tuned.